Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Dan Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith. And today we are joined by Anna Trier, Associate Director of Lynx Hall.
Hey guys, thanks so much for having me.
Oh, of course.
How are you doing today?
I'm pretty well, yeah. We had a really busy week last week, but our executive director gave us a mandatory day off yesterday, so I'm feeling a little rejuvenated now.
Oh, that's so good, though.
Yeah, I went to the zoo. It was great.
The Lincoln Park Zoo?
Yeah, I was just, what can I do outside?
Yeah, that is a thing that you can do outside. And it's free, isn't it?
It is free. Yeah. I rode the carousel, and that's $3, so, you know, it's just an upgrade that you can choose to make or not.
They let you know at the gate, like...
They're like, this is free, like, animals are free, you know, blah, blah, blah. Not that you can take them, but, like, looking at the animals are free, but, like, carousel, $3.
Yeah. I want to see that upsell script.
Anyway.
Sorry. I don't know what's up with me today. We're really excited to have you because we love Lynx Hall. I think that, isn't that, like, a social, like, a hashtag or something?
Oh,
or
gosh, like the, I hope so. I'm going to look it up when we wrap.
Yeah. Or there's... I've seen a heart Lynx Hall something. Is that maybe the profile photo? Is that the... Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, is there a heart? Yeah, there is a heart in our profile photo right now, I think.
Yeah, I just... I think of, you know... I'm like, oh, this is a... I was going to make a... I'm just going to do it. It's like Kanye. Okay. I love everything, you know?
Yeah.
This was not worth
just
it.
Just like Kanye.
This is not worth it, what I just did. Okay, we were really excited to have you. We really genuinely believe, and we've seen a few things at Lynx Hall, but that it holds a special place in the Chicago artistic scene. There's just so much interesting stuff happening in that space all the time, and has been for a while. And you know, one of our frequently followed things but infrequently attended things is the Constellation series, just because it's so cool and refreshing to see new music prioritized to that level. Like, it's not often that you see that, and if it is, it's not to that kind of like recurring and kind of like committed degree. That's stuff that I wanted to make sure to say at top. But the other thing that I kind of want to know is, like, or not want to know, but want to have for our audience, is for those familiar with Lynx Hall, kind of what's the best way to describe the work that that space does?
I think that's a good place to start. So Lynx Hall, we've been around for about 40 years, and we were founded by three experimental choreographers, and I think that's kind of a good way to think about what happens there. It is, you know, it's artist-driven, it's self-producing work, it's projects we undertake in partnership with artists, and it's all focused on experimentation and risk-taking. So we ask audiences and artists to take equal risks. Mm-hmm. Not to your life and limb. not to your life and limb, but as far as just being open-minded and thrilled to experience new things together and excited to see what is inspiring to whoever is making in that space on any given day or any given week. So it's really experimentation and risk that's at the heart of what we do, and creating space for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's an interesting kind of like guy. Like, one of the things I'm finding myself asking folks a lot about lately, especially when it comes to, because you know, when you're looking at things that are like potentially experimental or different, you know, I mean, like, we just had the Allegretz Choir on, and thinking of. Because I feel like it'd be, like, just being like, what's the theme of your work? Or, like, what's the through point? Is, like, that's not entirely... But there's a certain degree of, like, guiding principle, if that makes sense. Or, like what kind of direction, like, an experimental space wants its work to go in? I mean, is there a thing like that for Lynx Hall? Is there, like, a North Star, if you will? Like, does that make sense? Or
Yeah, I think I'm following. And what I would say is that there, oftentimes with an organization or presenting venue. There'll be some sort of programmatic guidance based by an artistic director or curator or or name that human what you want to name them. The Grand Czar of Performing Arts at such and such. But we've actually really made a conscious choice over the years to not have an artistic director, to not have a curator for Lynx Hall's programming, not for Constellations, but to really follow the inspirations of artists working in our community. So we've got a curatorial residency, which produces three festivals each year. So we've got three different curators that we select, in which case things that are happening that year are dictated by what's inspiring them. And mm-hmm. we follow those things down the their rabbit holes as far as we can go. And a lot of it's based on, on what's inspiring our resident artists and what they're creating that year, which is wonderful because then we get to expand and contract and flux and flex and move in a million different directions. The range of projects I've worked on in the 8 years I've been at Lynx Hall is staggering, and you don't get it most places. From like experimental artist television festivals and programming to contemporary kabuki dance work. Like, it's just really runs the gauntlet.
Well, that's the thing that's the thing that's always kind of amazing to me about the space, is that it is both not catering to mainstream audiences, but also very well known. And like that, carving out that space, I don't know how, I'm trying to ask you how you do it, but I don't, that's a weird question way to ask that. Cause I don't even know how to begin to phrase that in a way that's not so, like, however you visualize someone asking, how do you do what
how
you do?
How do you do this?
But, yeah.
So I want to take your question and I want to narrow it. So, like, let's say that you're approached by an artist and they're, you know, they say, I want to do this, and y'all are into it, and, you know, and everything happens. Like, what does, how does Lynx help that artist see through to the night of the performance?
Ah, well, that's a great question. There's a lot of different entry points and a lot of different programs running through there. So sometimes it's someone comes to us and we try to figure out, like, what program it fits into, because that is how we allocate resources. And by resources, I mean time and dollars.
Yeah, right, yeah. Right.
So it's some of it's like, is this an artistic concept? Is this a programmatic concept? Is this something in between? And then how much time we find we can spend on something is dependent on how generous the impulse is. Mm-hmm. So if an artist comes to us with an idea that will be beautiful and create platforms for them and for other artists, it makes it really easy for us to open up doors and figure out how to make it shared and equitable between multiple people. Not that we don't do many, many projects that are just artists coming to us and being like, I want to make the show happen. We've got lots of residency programs and things like that, literally specific for that purpose. But what's often harder for us to do is someone come in and just be like, I just want to do this, make this happen. and be like, okay, here's some money. So outside of our regular programs, when we bring something in, such as Jess Marasa, who's Water and Can Productions, came to us a couple years ago with an idea for a residency structure that didn't really exist anywhere in Chicago and didn't exist at Lynx Hall, where there'd be less rehearsal time, but lots of works in progress dates over the course of 6 months leading up to a final performance. So all of those works in progress dates are public and people can come and see work developing little by little. And then everybody gets a chance to have a fully produced final performance. So it was the idea of, like, she had a way that she wanted to create, and she knew other people in her community would be interested in creating this way. So she wanted to curate a residency as her production company that offered an opportunity to not just her, but three other artists. And, you know, we found the space and the performance dates, and we figured out how, you know, to cover production fees in partnership with the artists. And it's in its third iteration right now. And the final performances by the current artist will be this August.
Wow.
And it's just like, that wasn't our idea. That was Jess's idea.
Well, and I think that's, you know, when we, like, we talk a lot with a lot of folks that are, like, working on projects, and, you know, there's something, there's always something about, like, there's always just the thought of, like, okay, what space is this going to happen in? And I think that there's a lot of thinking about venues from not the perspective of the venue. So it's really interesting and refreshing to hear all of this kind of from you. But I'm also really, what I'm specifically, like, really interested in is, and think is really cool, is how open to that experimental edge Lynx Hall is. And I wonder what it is about the way in which you've grown that space that has made it that way. Do you feel like it's just a matter of kind of like knowing the hoops, like because you've like had so much experience with experimental work that you're like, okay, like being able to build a residency, for example, like being able to develop a residency is like a major undertaking. And the fact that it was like something that you were able to do in you said 2 years, right? Has been going.
This is the third volume three of it, right? Now,
so yeah. Yeah. And it, so, yeah. I mean that I like, there's a, I, is it that, is it just the like willingness to be open to like individuality and experimentation, or is it experience, do you think? Or is there even an answer to that question? Is that like too?
Well, with something like that, it's, I think it's both. I think it's a lot of, we've got a really great staff, that doesn't feel threatened when somebody comes to us with an idea, that it's not like, oh, well, that wasn't my idea, we can't make right. it happen. It's really not an ego-driven organization.
Right.
And I think a lot of that comes from, we have an amazing executive director, Roel Schmidt, the best way I've ever been able to describe her is that she works harder with less ego than anyone I've met my entire life. Like, she works hard for the work, which is pretty amazing. And that, I think, really kind of sets the tone of how we get things done. It's not about the people who work there. It's not about a single individual artist or a golden child who's, right. like, so brilliant. It's really finding creative structures that help multitudes and multiples and really foster... foster a stronger sense of community and create more resources instead of just use resources.
Wow. Yeah. Sorry. No, well, I think it's super interesting because one of the things we talk about a lot is, we just talked about it on the last episode, is like coalition building, especially in a space like in a city like Chicago, where there are so many people doing like individual projects and kind of doing, you know, there's so many people kind of like working from the ground up, there's so much grassroots energy, like it can be really hard to balance, like, I founded and started this project with like, there are other people out there, there are projects that are bigger than mine, there's like a way that I can be involved with something bigger than myself. Like, that's such an interesting, is that a balance that you find yourself thinking about? Like, because that seems like it almost feels like in that way, from what you've kind of explained about Lynx Hall, like y'all are coming from the other end of that. I'm used to thinking of it like as very ego driven people, because you have to, when you start your own thing, like it's like, oh, I need to visualize myself as an artist and like create this brand that is me. And it's like that's an interesting, like, other end of the spectrum thing.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of things that are in the, I don't know, arts community, not just in Chicago, but everywhere, that do really tend to push that self-focus. So mm-hmm. I think part of our job is to pull that apart a little bit and demonstrate the fact that actually you can do a lot more in partnership, and you can do a lot more in community. I mean, sweat equity at Lynx Hall is what has gotten us by and has gotten us through 40 years. There are so many amazing experimental movement and performance and sound spaces that started around the same time as us or started after us and have not made it to this 40 year. And it doesn't mean they weren't fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Randolph Street Gallery, amazing. Moaming, amazing. All sister spaces to Link's Hall at different points in time. And, like, incredibly innovative work, fantastic programming. And we're standing, not necessarily because we're a genius facilitator, but because there was just somebody who was always willing to show up and open the door and make it happen. There was somebody who was always willing to, pay the rent for Link's Hall before they paid their own rent. Our founder, Bob Eisen, lived in the old Link's Hall office space and, like, cleaned the building for years and years and years and years. And that's how the doors stay open. Like, that is how the doors stay open anywhere. And places close when, I don't want to say exclusively, there's a million reasons places close. A lot, in my experience, a lot of the time, places closed because there isn't the next person to grab the baton and be the person who's willing to show up no matter what, keep the door open, and pay the organization first before themselves.
Yeah, that's real as fuck.
But I mean, and we're a lot more stable than that these days. Much, much more stable than that these days. We're feeling really good right now. But sweat equity continues to be an enduring part of mm-hmm. what we do. The amount of work that we do and we can get done at our space compared to the amount of staff hours we have is not equivalent. And we are capable of keeping our production levels so insanely high, both in quality and quantity. Literally because artists work in the space and volunteer in the space. Everybody house manages everybody else's show. People show up and clean and paint the space. We have got, like, long-term partnerships with a couple companies that help, that are, like, our key holders and help keep our doors open on certain days. Mm. It's sweat equity that keeps experimental spaces open.
Well, and I think that's such an interesting thing, especially in a place like Chicago, where a lot of artists do their art because they love it and continue to do it and have a degree of success. But it's also those stories tend to even go alongside folks who are not making the majority of their income from the art they're making. And I think that's such an interesting, one of the things I have been thinking about a lot recently is there's weirdly a higher bar for art being made here because there are so many people that are doing it because they love the art. Does that make sense? Like, it's not mm-hmm. just about, like, the worth to the art, the work that you're doing is not just about, like, how much you're getting paid from it, but, like, really truly trying to make, and that's, like, an artistic experience, and that's something that I think that, like, that somehow reads through everything that Link's Hall does, which I think is really remarkable, and that's not a connection I've made before with Link's Hall specifically, but I, like, just thinking about it and talking about it, I'm realizing that is that something that the idea of setting a bar of worth, that's a weird way of wording it, but what I mean is, like, that you know, marking of this is an artistic experience that we're, like, goal setting and things like that. Is that something that comes into play? Do you know what I mean? Like,
I think that, please correct me if I followed that train of thought down the wrong rabbit hole. It happens with me from time to time. Like, no, but this is what I'm thinking about right now.
Mm-hmm. I also love hearing those things too, when it's not the same rabbit hole, where it's like, what did I let you make you go down?
But as far as spaces or venues or organizations in whatever way they contribute, whether they're grant makers or production facilities or so on and so forth, there is this idea of establishing the value of an artist or a project. You're nodding, so I feel like I might be going in the right direction.
Yeah. The word I was actually looking for before was value. I kept saying worth, and I was like, that's not what I mean at all, because literally what I'm talking about is not money.
So what I'd say is I work with a group of people who really strongly believe that all creative output has incredibly strong worth and incredibly strong value. Mm-hmm. There is something within a creative community about that we talk about a lot about building building the scaffolding to create a secure and strong arts community here in Chicago. So a lot of our conversations are not about Lynx Hall. They're about our entire ecosystem of performing arts in Chicago.
Yeah.
Because we look at what our role is in that, how do we support, strengthen other organizations that we partner with, that we know our creative community needs to survive. It's really important to us that we're not the only people doing this work. Yeah. plurality of support systems is so important to a healthy artistic ecosystem. So our conversations as far as creating value are really about how do we build a scaffolding for artists to keep building and growing and being able to take their next step. Mm-hmm. So how do we create those systems so that there are the appropriate resources available to where they are in their creative career? Part of that was a little while back we ended our long-standing Link Up residency program and we launched a commissions program, which is a multi-tiered residency program. That was looking a little bit at that problem in that situation, but it's also something that we talk about when we're writing larger scale grants or applying in partnership with artists for awards, is looking at our ecosystem and like, what are the... to get to the next level, to get to the award, to push somebody to break out and get a national level something, a national level grant, a national level award, recognition, review. So much of that is there enough in your creative community that they can actually look like they've accomplished something here? Whether you've been self-producing for 20 years and have produced a million shows, if you're in a creative community that doesn't have any awards, any grants, any residencies, there's nothing on your resume that makes it look like you can get and Guggenheim. Like, yeah. It's just not going to happen because nobody has signed off on you yet. So I don't think that trying to, like, check those boxes and present those awards is what Lings Hall is about, but we're incredibly conscious of the fact that our ecosystem needs to have those tools and those facilities for artists to keep growing and for artists to receive recognition outside of the city of Chicago.
That's super powerful, because that is an interesting thing, because in a lot of ways, you know, because we think about this a lot from the magazine end, because there are a lot of things that you can accomplish without money.
Mm-hmm.
And we've learned that pretty recently, like, in so much that we've, like, learned what it takes to, like, get press passes to festivals and press passes to conferences. Like, we got into C2E2, which was super cool for us, because, like, that we've been only going for a year. And I'm not entirely saying this just to, like, talk about our own stuff, but I think it's
but also, round of applause for us C2E2 for free.
but I think that it's hard to... It's an interesting thing when you're doing things like residency work, when you're doing direct community and individual building work with kind of individual folks. There's the DIY grassroots space. It's really hard to find the resources that point you in the direction of what those, like, societally deemed checkpoints are.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you as an organization don't believe in them, being aware of them and educating other folks to be able to take advantage of them, that's such a powerful nuanced position to be in. And I think that's super, super powerful. And
if you don't have a question, I do.
I did, but then I just lost it.
Okay. Keep thinking about it, because I want to know more about commission, because
cool.
I know that that's your program that you've built, and I want, and like, it looks super cool, and I want to hear all about it.
Oh, hooray. No, thank you. So as I believe I was saying earlier, I think. A handful of years ago, or I think it's really only 2 years ago now. It feels a little longer than that. We ended our long-standing Link Up residency program, which had existed for 15, maybe 16 years. It was fantastic. It provided artists long, like, six months of rehearsal and support, performances at Link's Hall that they didn't have to rent the facility for, staff support, marketing support, a videographer for their performance, just like the basic things that artists were paying for themselves, mm-hmm. and just being like, no, we can create a package and
right.
you don't have to self-produce this. You can do it in partnership with us. And that took us up to just a year or two past, about 5 years ago, we moved into our current venue in partnership with Constellation. And we ran Link Up for a season or two just past that as we were kind of experimenting with and trying to figure out what our new facilities were capable of, how and why we needed to expand, how and where we needed to expand, mm-hmm. And just collecting a lot of feedback and a lot of data and getting a lot of impressions from artists. And one of the things that just seemed to become blatantly true in our new space was that performance opportunities. People were really hungry for performance opportunities in the new venue in a way that in our old second story Wrigleyville walk-up was appealing, but like just not quite as appealing. Mm-hmm. So it was part of what we were looking for. It was like, okay, if artists are really hankering for performance opportunities, one, we don't want to just provide that for four artists a year. That just felt like we were not serving enough people within our new space that had two performance spaces, that had two studios that could be activated at all times. And two, like, how can we really expand those abilities and moments to show, but really hold on to the significance and value of rehearsal processes?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause that has been... that has been what we've been able to offer for decades. And that is really important to, it's a really important resource that we think we can still offer is longer term rehearsive immersive time in the space that you're gonna perform in, access to rehearsal space, which is still a, people are rehearsing in their kitchens. People are rehearsing like mm-hmm. on their roofs and in their yards, but having a sprung wood, easy on your joint, not gonna hurt you. Rehearsal space is still a hot commodity mm-hmm. in yeah. Chicago. So kind of holding onto that, increasing the number of performance opportunities we're offering, increasing the number of artists that we are, working with. So we took a kind of community-based festival programming that we'd been slowly developing into a curatorial residency and just really named it thus. Like, mm-hmm. it's a curatorial residency. We're producing three festivals a year. We partner with artists in our community about what they're going to do, what those festivals are going to be, and we just chase those as far as we can go. And then in the artist programming, we switched over from serving four artists to having a three-tier program that serves something around 18 artists every year. So there's a summer intensive program, which is shorter rehearsal residencies with opportunities to perform in a works in progress series within our season. And then those rehearsals happen over the summer. So that's 1 to 4 weeks of rehearsal time and a works in progress performance opportunity. We've continued to have a residency program. It's a 3-month program that is offered to four artists every single year. So they've got rehearsal space, workshop support for the development of their projects, a paid mentorship, artist stipends that come monthly. Not a lot. Don't think it's a lot.
But it's something.
Right. Yeah. Well, that was the other exciting is in this restructure, all artists have a stipend for the creation of their work. It's not a lot. We'd love to do more, but for the summer intensive programs, it's $100 a week per project.
Mm-hmm.
For the residencies, it's $200 a month for the 3 months, plus the majority share of your ticket sales. I mean, they're double bills, so you have to share it with the other artist that's performing because mm-hmm. you're both performing. But mm-hmm. and then for our fellowship program, which is a 6-month program, so you have 6 months for more established artists to through the final rehearsal and tech process leading up to a piece that they've been developing and researching for a while. Mm-hmm. And that comes with a $500 a month artistic stipend and creation support. There's a very small discretionary fund, so if they want to hire a dramaturge or extra marketing support or extra... extra
yeah, right.
Whatever, it's discretionary because this is the arts, you know, people's needs are always going to be different.
Mm-hmm.
And then they've got a 2-week run of their performance at the end of their fellowship program, which we produce. So it's all, you know, the residency program is more geared towards emerging artists or artists who've maybe established themselves in Chicago, but not beyond. The fellowship's, of course, geared a little bit towards artists who've already received some recognition and accolades, has, you know, an established method of making, really.
Mm-hmm.
So they can really take full advantage of the resources offered. And the summer intensive is incredibly designed to be for everybody. We really like it when artists who are collaborating with out-of-town folks get the opportunity to, like, have some time together for, like, a week or 2 weeks to work to, you know, to, like, my person's flying in, we need some dedicated time together, because those relationships really help artists in Chicago get seen outside of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And that's become increasingly significant to us. Sorry, I am rambling a little bit.
No, no, no,
but
no.
But it is a everything big program.
Yeah, everything you're saying is really relevant to so many different conversations we've had, like, on this show. And, like, for artists that we've talked with, and, you know, one of the things we talk about a lot, and this is me choosing one of those things, one of the things we talk about a lot is, and it, like, comes down to kind of, like, programming and producing. And we talk about it a lot in the vein of, we talk about it in the vein of, and this isn't necessarily what I'm asking about, but in the vein of helping to produce and support works that are from marginalized perspectives, like not white, straight, cis stories. And the thing that that was the kind of catalyst for me kind of better understanding and thinking about the idea of the difference between, like, production and logistical support and, mm-hmm. like, artistic licensure.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like you can build spaces like residency spaces and development spaces and things like that, that there is two separate things. There's, like, things that you can do that are supporting in a logistical sense that just, like, are things that people need, but then there's a way that you can do that without inflicting on, like, someone's vision, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that isn't talked about frequently, you know, like we talk a lot about kind of, like, major institutional players, especially, like, we're both from opera, so, like, that's our background. So, like, we see a lot of very hyper traditional stuff where it's like, oh, we can't, like, everybody needs to fit the traditional vision of what happened 200 years ago, and that's fine. Like, that's one thing, but, you know, it's when you come to experimental, like, that line between, like, a person's artistic vision and kind of, like, these logistical needs and you know, afford, like, being able to receive any kind of money for your work is really important, not just for the sake of people affording their work, but for, like, on an actual kind of, like, thinking about, like, how art is, like, part of the world that we're in. Like, it's just They all kind of go hand in hand. But I'm wondering if for you, is that a line that you find yourself thinking about, or do you think that being in kind of this experimental space, like the like artistic licensure of it, the like this person's vision is kind of like taken as a given?
Can you define the line a little bit more?
Yeah, it's weird to think about. So I guess, like, because it's something that I'm realizing, like, the space that, like, Lynx Hall comes from in that kind of conversation seems to be one that it's part of in the, like, the way that you've built this project. What am I trying to say? The residency, like, it's the commission space. Like, it's about helping people bring their visions to fruition. And it's about kind of meeting people where they are. Whereas, like, and sometimes there are people that will program and just be like, oh, well, we got to fill our accessibility or, like, diversity quotas and kind of, like, do a thing and reach out to a thing, but not really kind of, like, meet people where they are. Just be able to be like, oh, look at our marketing. We include a thing that's not the norm, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we try to meet... I think we try to meet people where they are. I think we try to meet artists where they are. I don't remember if this was on or off mic, but earlier we were talking about the fact that Lynx Hall is an interesting space because it works with artists at every stage of their career.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll work with incredibly established artists with national and international reputations, and we'll work with artists on their first production ever. I mean, usually they've done like a school production or something like that before.
It's not like, I don't know how I'm going to do in front of people. I've never spoken in public before.
So usually somebody does have some connection to performance prior to walking in the door at Lynx Hall, but we've worked with people all the time who've never self-produced a show, who are fresh out of college or went to college for biology, but loved, you know, performance in some other capacity or in high school, and then started doing just some open mics, and they're like, I really actually think I have something larger to make. So we're open to that person, and we're open to someone who's touring internationally, and we program that entire gauntlet. I do think that we are conscious of wanting to continue to be that space, and that's a value of ours. So I do think that when we look at a programmatic season, and we actually haven't talked about this yet, but next year is our 40th anniversary season, and we're eliminating our rental program in favor for making every performance slot at Lynx Hall during our 40th anniversary season a partnership where artists don't have to pay any fees to participate in as a performer. Sorry, audiences still have to pay fees. but you can do it knowing that an artist did not pay any fees that season. I think maybe what you're getting at a little bit is the conversations we're having around this season, where it's how can we genuinely represent what Lynx Hall is in how we're programming. Mm-hmm. And, you know, looking at the, I've been at Lynx Hall for 8 years, and my boss, Roel, hired me a month or two after she started there, so we've both been there. It's kind of the Roel administration. So throughout that, I mean, we've definitely built up a value system of inclusion in wanting to bring out performing stories from all walks of life and all backgrounds. A wide range of artistic mediums, a wide range of artists at different points in their career. And I think our 40th anniversary season, where we really do have full control of picking those things, is really going to be reflected of that. But it never feels like checking boxes to me. Mm-hmm. I genuinely believe that, like, a performing arts space in Chicago should represent the demographics of the city of Chicago. Like, our residency programs last year, I think, had about 60% of the artists involved were people of color, which is pretty close to the Chicago demographics. And it's there is a level of being conscious of it, but I've never felt like I've selected an artist solely based on that.
Mm-hmm.
It's really excellent work that comes to us, and the fact that we strive to reflect the city and the fact that we are reflecting the city is really a reflection of the fact that there are artists in this city from all walks of life making really excellent work.
Yeah. Well, I think that's, you know, I think that was kind of my eventuality with the thought I was trying to have before, because, like, in a lot of ways, what I've gathered about Lynx Hall is that malleability, that ability to, like, be able to be something to the like person doing their first production or the person that's like a very established artist, like that has meant that, you know, like you had worded it before as like that a lot of the Lynx Hall's work is like without ego, and I that is such an interesting thing, though, that, you know, that it makes a ton of sense that after 40 years, like, you find that what you're actually doing is like something that's like actually accessible, actually diverse, and actually like a representative of the people that are wanting to work with you, because it's a finding of like the least common denominators of what like artistic production entails. And that's such an interesting, it's just remarkable. And I guess the thing that's weirdly hard about interviewing you about is because that's the thing that we want to hear about. But it's also just it's such a, you know what it is it's such a Chicago thing. Like, Chicagoans do it, you know, and then talk about it after the fact. Like, and the one of the things that we ask about a lot, and we joke that it's the, so we sometimes joke that it's the question we ask when we don't have a question to ask, but that's not what it is in this scenario. what it really is like,
we wouldn't be bringing up that's the quip, that this, yeah, is the question. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, because I think that, I think that this is a really relevant piece to this conversation, so the question is, what does making art in Chicago specifically mean to your work? And what is what about the city of Chicago? It's a very universal question, but never before have I been like, this is the question I need to ask. Because what do you think the work that you're doing at Links Hall, why do you think that it couldn't be the same in another city?
The work itself is in the artwork, or like the administrative work?
A bit of structure? Both, kind of like the arc general.
The environment that's being fostered.
Oh, I think that's really interesting. I think there's lots of bits and pieces of what we do that are similar to things that happen elsewhere. Mm-hmm. But we're all, you know, accumulation of our parts. So, you know, there are bits of things that we have happening here that are similar to things that I know are happening in, you know, Minneapolis or San Francisco or Detroit. We even have a few bits of things that are not entirely dissimilar from things that are happening in New York City, though we don't like to talk about it. But, so I do actually think that, like, nationally there is a lot of overlap. We just wrapped up like a 3 or 4 year program where we were doing curatorial exchange to the National Performance Network with a handful of Japanese partners. And there are things over there that are happening that could happen in Chicago. And there are definitely things over there that could not happen in Chicago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think that it's about like the sum of its parts. There's something about Chicago where, to some extent, and who knows how long it lasts, it is a somewhat affordable city to live in. So there are places that are making great work that don't have as an inclusive artistic environment because it's just too debilitatingly expensive. Mm-hmm. Not just to live, but to like rent a performance space and produce work. Links Hall is maybe part of the reason this exists, but it can't be the whole reason it exists. Chicago is a self-producing artist city. Artists have ideas about what they want to see and what they want to happen, and they make them happen. And they make them happen in somebody's basement. They make them happen in a gallery space that's, you know, open for 5 years and operating as a nonprofit and then goes away. I co-ran with several really excellent human beings an experimental performance installation storefront gallery space for 7 years that produced performance and multimedia things called Happy Collaborationist. And, you know, like, it was just space that we could open up and invite artists to self-produce in. I think that is the part of Chicago that that I love and keep coming back to as being really uniquely, strongly Chicago-centric, that these works, these self-producing artist projects are not always marginalized in the same way that they are in other cities' art scenes. Mm-hmm. They get written up in the big newspapers. Not every single one of them, but you've got, like, there's this wiggle room to break out into that kind of field in a way that I don't always see in other cities. And I'm really attached to that. I also just love the idea that an artist can be empowered to, like, have a vision and make it happen. And that since so many people, since the vast majority of artistic work happening in Chicago is produced that way, that it feels, there's something that feels possible about it because you look around and you see it everywhere you go.
Mm-hmm.
So that DIY element, which is nothing new, is very Chicago, and I love that. Which is why I would never want that to not be part of Link's Hall. It's such an important part of Link's Hall. Like, an open door policy, someone being able to walk in and be like, I want to do this show, and we can be like, okay, here are some grants you can apply for. And if you get them, if you can't get them, we'll figure out some way to make it happen. But you've got a vision, and you're in Chicago, so you can execute it.
Well, and I think that, wow, because I think that all of that has so much to do. One of the things that you were saying earlier before that, and the reason why I was like, oh, I kind of want to talk with you about this more, is you were talking about thinking about the work being done in Chicago on a national scale. And it's something that is hard to kind of think about and parse out, because the thing that I always worry about and the thing that we talk about with this is, how do you not lose that about Chicago? You know, like, how do you advocate for the nature of anyone being able to do a potential thing on a national scale when that isn't always reflected on the national scale? And I think the way that I really think that would be a way to think about this question is, like, for an organization to exist for 40 years and to still prioritize that is something so remarkable to me. Like, what do you know, or what do you think is the reason that Link's Hall has made a commitment to do that?
I think our commitment is that most of the people who have been involved in running Link's Hall are artists.
Yeah.
Not every organization has an executive director who's got, like, an MFA.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, a lot of them come from, like, development or some other realm, but, like, and that's been a long case history for Link's Hall. Not 100% of the staff who have been at Link's Hall have been artists, but I would say probably, like, 90 to 95% of the staff at Link's Hall over a 40-year time span have been artists. So I think that's an important part of the history to just acknowledge and be like, actually, we're all folks who have our own creative practices. So that is a unique perspective on what the struggle is and what the value of a space like Lynx is. Because it really comes from a point of, like, oh, what do I need? Or what did I need when I was making? I haven't produced a performance in a little stretch of time. But but I went to school for studio art. And I had a performance, a practice as a performance artist. I ran a super DIY space. Our director, you know, wrote and produced her own plays and movies. And this is just our current staff. Our communications director, Felicia, has her own performance practice, and has been a performer in Chicago for decades. Was one of the founders of Honey Pot Performance. She's amazing. Our production director, Brett Swinney, has a background as a photographer and a community arts organizer. And, like, we have worn all of the hats. So the previous staffs have really similar demographics. It's people who have dance practices currently or very recently passed. Mm. It's people, the value 40 years on exists because we're you know, we're institution, we're not that institutional. I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't let funders hear that.
Well, and I think that that's the thing that I find myself using that word a lot lately, institutional. And I think I know what I mean by that. And I don't know if other, and it's something we're still kind of like better understanding, because like, I mean, in, I hope that like more institutions are like what Links Hall has established as institutional. You know, like I think a lot of like
thank you.
Like that
is blushing.
Well, and I think a lot about like tradition. Like as a person that studied opera, it's really hard to not consider the concept of tradition. And like obviously, there's terrible parts of that word and how it's been realized in the world. But there's also something to be said about like humanity making a commitment to like certain cultural aspects that we deemed important, like artistry and music and literature, and you know, name a thing that is the positive of tradition. And it's just refreshing to see a space that's been around for decades that is, you know, existing on a level that is working to build routine, like artistic routine. Like that's such a, you know, it's just an interesting thing. So I love
that phrase, artistic routine, because it's, I just find it so, it's so, I'm thinking about it in, like, terms of rehearsal practice.
Sure, yeah.
And it's just, it's such a significant part of making work, and making work that is, really just the best that it can be. I feel like I'm, like, Olympic advertisement or something. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it is getting harder for people to maintain that focus. And there's a million reasons, you know, media and gadgets and, the social demands of creating work, the increased administrative demands of creating work that exists today on artists that didn't exist, you know, 10, 15 years ago. The increased cost of living, having to do extra hustle to get enough dollars to pay rent, which means that there's fewer hours in the day to maintain a rehearsal practice or a studio practice for visual artists. Mm-hmm. Trying to create a stable environment where people can maintain routines, and your routine can be not doing the same thing every single day. But I actually do like the repetitive processes. But the importance of artistic routines and creating a space where that can be valued. I love that. Thank you for that.
I appreciate that. I love that. I think a lot about like how these things don't have to go hand in hand with the idea of like selling out. Like, it can seem really like being like, oh, I want to establish routines. It's like, oh, that's so boring of you. And it's like, I mean, I guess, but if your routines are doing dope shit, like that's a routine of doing dope shit. And like, that's something to be celebrated. Anyway, I think we've gone a little over, but that's okay.
But I have one last question. So with you know, you've been with Links Hall for 8 years, and you know, I'm sure you've seen countless performances there. I'm wondering, is there one performance that stands out in your mind as like, oh my god, like this is some of the best shit I've ever seen?
You're trying to get me in trouble.
No, I just like, I want to know, like, because I think it's really easy, you know, when you've been involved with an organization where it just kind of all becomes like a wash of good. Mm-hmm. But I think that like identifying like the first thing that comes to your mind of just like, oh yeah, no, like that was really amazing. Like, and that's not to take a, and for anyone from Links Hall listening, like, that's not to take away from like the amazing amount of good from every other piece of whatever that has been produced, but like, what has been the thing that you've been like, wow, like that's really stuck with me?
That's really stuck with me. Wow. I mean, first, I would say there's like a large number of performances that like I will come back to like years later, and they're still in my brain, and that is completely and totally true. So there could be a million people on this list. If you're listening to this, you're probably on this list now. I will say If I think back to, like, what is one of the things where I'm just going to be like, I'm just going to, it's going to be so significant and I'm going to just feel so honored years to come that I was able to participate in that, was in the first handful of months when we were in our new space, we produced a work, and I'm going to be in trouble because she's not a Chicago artist. we produced a work by Sharon Bridgeford called Riversea. It was a theatrical jazz work, and we spent years in partnership with her developing it. She did a guest teaching slot, at DePaul University in their theater department, and it's a beautiful, intimate work. It was stunning from script to embodiment to all of these performance workshops that we did all over Chicago to develop it. It was really, the production-wise, administration-wise, it was the baby of Raul Schmidt and Marie Casimir, who was the associate director before I was. She's a very good friend. She's not mad I got her job. She moved. what they were able to accomplish in partnership with Sharon was just stunning, and I think that being tied to that project is going to be, like, a huge honor for the rest of my life, and it was beautiful to witness.
Oh, it's so good.
Do you have any, I realize now that, well, and sorry for referencing astrology at all, but the moon's in Sagittarius today, and I'm feeling very, like, intellectually exploratory, so I realize now that I've, like, asked the majority of the questions. But did you have any more, like, good...
No, I was, honestly, I was enjoying the discussion. When you were talking about artistic practice, mm-hmm. I had a similar thought to, and this isn't me trying to be like, I'm also smart, but, like, I had a similar, like, the term artistic practice also, like, really stuck with me, because I think that, like, in our lives, it is really easy to just kind of, like, be so caught up with the day-to-day that you're like, oh, well, you know, I'm tired tonight. Like, I'm gonna, like, set it to the side and I'm gonna touch it tomorrow. And then all of a sudden it's a month later. And mm-hmm. so, like, really treating it, you know, like a treat, like something that you get to do, like something that you, like, really set aside time to do, I think is so important. And so, like, treating it at, like, as a practice versus, you know, treating it as practicing is, mm-hmm. I think, a cool way of thinking about it.
And I struggle with the word, I even struggle with the word practice, because I'm like, oh, but we're mm-hmm. not practicing. So, you know, so, and I think internally, externally, I accept the terminology and I use it because we know what it means. Internally, I think of it more as, like, you know, existence, an artistic existence, supporting somebody's artistic existence, like through a residency program that really carves out time and asks people to invest their time in it. And it's, I mean, like I said, it's hard. It's a huge privilege. Like, it's really hard to put it first. But, like, my mother is a writer, and I see her get up before dawn and spend several hours writing before going to teach. Like, it's possible. Yeah. It's exhaustive, but it's possible.
Wow.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, great. So, the last thing we do with all of our guests is a one-minute plug for anything they have upcoming. Sometimes that's very obvious, like... I always have a bit here, but it's actually hard to pull off the bit, so I'm gonna just, like, call the bit as a bit right now. But the bit is usually like, oh, tell us about the event that you've been talking about this entire time. But let's actually talk about, so just kind of like what people can look forward to from Lynx, and kind of how people can keep better in the know about what's happening. But we also love hearing about what the fuck else do we do at the end? shout outs to other folks that you think are doing dope work, or any self-care stuff that you recommend. So that's like books, movies, TV shows, music, things like that.
Ooh, okay. I'm going to be terrible at that last category. It's been a while since I've had time for any of that. But we're in a festival month, and prior to that, we had a big fundraiser. So, like, I was like, well, I think that was maybe last year. but I'll start with, because I can always talk about links, I'll start with just some shout-outs for things that we've got going and we've got coming up the first week of June. So it's that week that transitions from May to June. Mm-hmm. Our residency artists, the four artists who've been with us for 3 months, are going to have the Commission Festival of New Work. They each get to perform their new projects a couple times. You can catch all four with a festival pass. It's going to be amazing. Innovative, fantastic work by AJ McCullen and Courtney Megadance and Nora Sharp and Sojourner Zenobois, and they are amazing. It's been wonderful having them with us for this first section of their residency. I'm really excited to wrap this up, though I hope I'm not wrapping up with any of them, and they will come back to us many, many times. And then the other just Lynx Hall shout out that I want to give, like I mentioned briefly before, we do have this 40th anniversary season coming up. If you're an artist in Chicago and you have a performance that you want to happen at Lynx Hall, you can actually apply to make that happen with no rental fees or production fees at Lynx Hall next season. The application's open now. If you go to our website and you look at the space section, there's all of the details there. Right now, we're looking for projects to be performed between August and December, and as we meet our fundraising goals, we'll be going to keep opening up months all the way through June. Woo!
Cool. That's really cool.
Thank you. There is so much wonderful activity happening happening in Chicago. I'm really excited for the Pivot Arts Festival coming up. They always do some great stuff. I'm really excited to see what their lineup is going to look like. I don't know. What else is happening? I'm just trying to think of, like, what I know I'm going to be at in the coming, what performances outside of Lynx Hall I know I need to be at in the coming. So often it's just things that fit into my my schedule of, like, when I don't have to be at Lynx Hall, when can I catch something? but I'll definitely be at some of the Pivot programming, and, I actually live in, like, the Pilsen Little Village area, so I usually try to catch everything that High Concept Laboratory is doing when I can, because they're right in my neck of the woods, really convenient.
Nice.
There's a lot of things that I usually see stuff in development, so there's a lot of works in progress. Performances, closed door performances that I'm really excited about seeing soon.
Cool. Nice.
But anyway, I usually post about them on social media, so if anybody looks me up and wants to friend me on Facebook, I shout things out before I attend.
Cool. Very cool. Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you all so much for listening. I've been Dan Johansson.
I continue to be Maureen Smith.
If you want to keep up with what we are up to, there are so many ways you can do that. The first is to head over to scopimag.com. That's our website. We spell that scapimag.com. We post all of our articles and podcast episodes there. Otherwise, you can find us on the old social media on Facebook. Our Facebook page is called Scopy Magazine. We also have a Facebook group called Sounding Board that we love and adore. If you can't find it from searching it, you can shoot either me or Facebook or Maureen a message, and we will get you in there. We talk about arts, local politics, and astrology. That's our thing. And then
Instagram, Tumblr.
Yeah, you can also find us on Instagram, Tumblr, and Twitter under Scopy Mag. We spell that the same way as the website. You can also find our podcast on most of the podcast places. We know for sure we're on iTunes Podcasts, Google Play, and Radio Public under Scopy Radio.
And I'm here to talk about the importance of subscribing. If you go to our website, scopymag.com, and go to our subscribe page, there are a couple ways that you can be a subscriber. The first is to enter in your email to receive an email whenever we post something, which is huge because although we post all of our content on social media, various algorithms eat our shit. So, like, if you want to be the first one of your friends to know what we're up to, sign up for those email blasts. It's super, super cool. I get them. I love it. And it, even though it's my magazine, but I love it. another way that you can help us out is by becoming a member. For $5 a month, you're going to get a pin that says, go out and make something. And at $10 a month, we are going to be launching a concert series in the coming months here in our apartment. So at $10 a month, you will be invited to those performances. So get on that. Also, if you're interested in advertising with us, that starts at $25 a month, and we are a super viable platform. It's kind of wild. So shoot us an email at scopymag@gmail.com for more information on that. So yeah, subscribe.
Cool. Thanks again so much for listening. Go out and make something.
Yep.